Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Dr. Ehrlich continues his discussion with the people of planet Earth. It feels a little like a revival meeting. Will you commit your life to a better world? Will you accept that it will be a difficult path? Are you willing to bear the ridicule and scorn that comes with a path to peace and cooperation? Many a life has been changed. Call our toll-free number now, 888-327-0061. You'll be glad you did. Want to return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
We continue our talk with Dr. Paul Ehrlich about his new book, One with Nineveh, published by Island Press and available at bookstores everywhere. And Dr. Ehrlich, this is your chance to talk. This is your chance to really continue this dialogue about what really is happening on the planet and what we can do. Kind of when we left off, I would like to look at this concept of corporations, because as you said, they are sort of a new emergent being on the planet.
Well, the corporations are a valuable way of dealing with certain parts of the economy, and I'm not saying we should dissolve corporations. The thing we should do, however, is a number of things we should do. One is to stop treating them as fictitious individuals, that is, as if they're the equivalent of you or me, and should have, for example, the equivalent of the right to vote and the rights to free speech. They have many more votes than we have when they're basically given the right to vote by pouring money into political campaigns and so on, and that should be stopped. Second thing is, there is an old story that has been promoted by, obviously, corporations, that the sole social responsibility of corporations is to maximize the profits of their stockholders. But, of course, there are other people involved in corporations besides stockholders, namely employees, and also the communities in which corporations operate. And corporations should be subjected to regulations that make sure they treat their employees correctly. And correctly does not, for example, include outsourcing their jobs to the places in the world where the people are poorest and therefore will work for the least money. That's not the way you solve poverty in the world. That's the way you make everybody except the ruling rich very, very, very poor. Second thing is that corporations must have responsibility to the communities within which they operate. And, for example, when the Exxon Valdez caused that disaster in Alaska, due entirely to the incompetence of the Exxon Corporation, the Exxon Corporation should have been dissolved. It could easily have been. It is chartered in a state in the United States, and all of the chartering provisions in states have the provision for dissolving the corporation if it doesn't perform properly, but there's no enforcement of that, and we should have enforcement of that. All the people who are in favor of, say, capital punishment for people who break the rules personally ought to be in favor of capital punishment for corporations that break the rules. Enron and it should have been dissolved totally, and the people in it who stole money from thousands and thousands and thousands of people should have been thrown promptly in jail. It seems to me unlikely that the real leadership and the people responsible will pay any significant penalty. Any more, by the way, than the people like Rumsfeld who are responsible for the horrors of Abu Ghraib are going to pay any penalty. Rumsfeld is definitely responsible, as is George W. Bush. They're the leadership. They're the people who went into Iraq as a preemptive war against all sense and then did not make reasonable preparations for what they were going to do in Iraq after they won the war. And yet those people are not going to pay the penalty. Some poor slobs and, people at the lower levels of the military are going to go to jail or have their careers ruined, while Rumsfeld and Bush will remain rich, fat, happy, and probably in office.
You know, this process of centralization of power through consolidation of wealth, money is power. And I think, obviously, people, the types of folks that you're talking about get that from top to bottom, and they willfully, it appears, are just centralizing the money. There's a transference of wealth that just keeps happening.
What's happening from the poor to the rich, too. We're giving, you know, both between nations and within the United States. The poor are getting poorer and the rich are getting richer.
And, of course, one of the problems that we have is the fact that when you start talking about corporations, it can be perceived by so many as if it's some sort of an anti-American, anti-business campaign, and it's not that at all. You're talking about a different form of corporation, and it has to do with the centralization of power. And one of the things that you talk about in your book is the fact that although corporations are given the status of humans, the problem is the fact that corporations lack empathy.
Well, they lack empathy. There is no way that they can feel for people. It's not a matter of that people in corporations are necessarily evil. It's the way the structure works. And by the way, I think, like all of my colleagues, I think that markets are extremely important. But markets, as all economists who have any sense know, and as Adam Smith knew very clearly, Adam, markets have to operate in societies which have certain ethical rules, and the playing field has to be kept level. And what you see in the, for instance, in the present administration is the idea that markets without any constraints on them are the ideal way to run economies in the world. And that's just nonsense. No, Adam Smith would have thought that nonsensical. Many people don't realize that Adam Smith also wrote a book called The Theory of Moral Sentiments, which outlined the kind of moral society in which his markets had to operate. We don't have any moral society now. We have what I think is generally agreed by people who read books, the worst administration that the United States has ever had. There may have been more crooks in the Tyler administration, but Tyler couldn't have blown up the world if he wanted to. We're being run by a bunch of oil companies and selfish ignoramuses who do not care about what happens to our children or the future. It's a very, very dangerous situation. I do not have a single colleague in any discipline who does not think that this is the worst situation the United States has ever been in.
It is absolutely. It's just kind of stops the breath at times to think about where we're headed and the fact that we absolutely must turn this around, which you make as a point in your book, One with Nineveh, so clearly. You know, we have a caller on line one. This is Sandy. Sandy, your question, please.
I have a question on population. China, with its huge population, took drastic steps quite a while ago. Could you comment on India's population and the control of it?
Well, India is going to pass China in terms of brute numbers of people sometime in the next couple of decades. I don't remember exactly where, but they're both over a billion now. Of course, the third largest country, still growing like a skyrocket, is the United States, and we're the big consumers. But interestingly, within China and within India, they're now, in those two giant countries, there are now quite large countries of people who are turning into super consumers. And one of the big problems between China and India, and of course Pakistan, is going to be trying to get hold of the resources to take care of those big populations and keep them, those countries, from fragmenting and falling into eventually warfare over what's left. So the population problem is better in the world than it was 20 years ago, in the sense that growth rates are coming down, that China was quite successful in reducing its birth rate. But of course, it's so large already that even today, the annual increment to the Chinese population is still very large. India has had less success. It didn't try such draconian measures. That's one of the, quote, problems, end quote, with a democracy. In China, they could impose it from the top. In India, they couldn't, and India is getting into deeper and deeper trouble because of it. So it's a complex situation. The good news is that overall, the population projections are better than they used to be, although one of the reasons is sad, and that is, of course, the spread of AIDS and the potential, of course, for the spread of other diseases. But if we manage to hold the world together in 75 years or so, we could be starting the slow decline to a sustainable population that will be necessary. The consumption front is much more difficult because, although most politicians now understand that population is a problem, they think consumption and more consumption is the solution. And that, of course, the scientific community has been trying to explain to them for 15 years is wrong. But
You know, we have so little time. We've got about a minute and a half left. And what I'd like to do is, you know, you mentioned the King of Bhutan, because leadership, radical leadership, radical, intelligent, caring leadership is required. Talk about that wonderful story.
Well, the Bhutanese looked around at the world, and they're sandwiched between China and India, two of the biggest countries in the world, and they, the King of Bhutan, who was an absolute ruler, decided that, A, he was going to give up his absolute power, which he did, and established a parliament, and they all got together, and it's an educated, by the way, it's their top educated people, they're not ignoramuses. The King of Bhutan is 10 times as smart as George Bush and 10 times as well educated. Said, we're going to not go for gross national product alone, we're going to go for gross national happiness. We're going to preserve our forests, we're going to preserve our culture, and the diversity of cultures is one of the wonders of humanity, and we're going to work at making our people all happy, healthy, well cared for, and in a wonderful environment. Whether they'll totally succeed or not is still an issue. They let TV in, which may have been a big mistake. I was actually talking to a minister of education in Bhutan, and I said, what impact has the TV had so far? And he said, well, so far, what it's done is regularized the dinner hour. So they have a sense of humor, too. They enjoy their lives. They have a wonderful environment. Whether they'll make it or not, I don't know, but it's too bad that every American politician couldn't take a trip to Bhutan and talk to some of their really smart people. We need help from countries like that that understand something about the world, if they can do a lot for us.
Dr. Ehrlich, thanks so much. You come back here anytime.
My great pleasure. Thank you very much.
This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios on the Wild Side.